Registrars, if you could please take your seats for the session with the board. And to the scribe, I'm not Matt Serlin.
Good afternoon, everybody. Pleasure to be here with the Registrar Stakeholders Group. We'll dispense for formalities and move right along. McKaylee?
Thanks, Steve. It's the Registrar's meeting with the ICANN board, as we do at most meetings. And we've got a number of topics we'd like to discuss with you this afternoon. Which is up on the screen now. Who wants to take the lead on the first one? Shall I or somebody else? Okay. So the first topic we wanted to have discussed with you was in relation to the 2013 RAA and registrar and industry outreach. We are very conscious of the fact that the 2013 contract includes a whole range of new obligations, and we have some concerns with respect to making both existing ICANN-accredited registrars aware and other bodies who are involved in the entire supply chain, because there is a concern that some may enter into the new contract without being aware of the new obligations.
Not sure that there's a question there. What would you like us to say?
Okay, sorry. I'll try and make a more concrete question. It's just the ICANN, a lot of registrars come to ICANN are actively engaged with ICANN. Unfortunately, there are quite a few registrars and others who are going to be affected by the new contract who aren't as actively engaged. So ICANN has said that they have some plans to organize a couple of events, one in Los Angeles and another one in China in August. And we wanted to bring to your attention and also ask you what your thoughts were on extending that outreach moving forward and what plans, whether the funds would be available for that. For example, this week we are here in Durban in South Africa, which might have been an opportunity to organize something along those lines, and yet that wasn't done. There'll be a meeting later this year in Buenos Aires, so we'd hope that something would be done there. So it's far too easy in some respects to run events in places where the language is English. While there are a lot of registrars whose first language isn't English and would not engage as actively.
Cyrus.
So thank you. This is Cyrus Namazi with ICANN. I can provide, there's really no question, I think, in there, but I can perhaps provide additional information in terms of what we're trying to do. The point that McKaylee is raising is very legitimate. There's a lot of new requirements in the RAA that operationally obligate the contracting parties, the registrars, to actually implement new systems and new requirements. And for that, we're actually putting together, as I briefed the registrar stakeholder group this morning as well, outreach programs for essentially providing training and additional information to potential contracting parties. One is being planned to be done in China in the Chinese language later on next month in August. There's one shortly after that being planned in Los Angeles. We heard from the stakeholder group that additional trainings would be warranted, and we're looking into that. In fact, I think Buenos Aires might even be too late. So I'm looking into planning additional webinars or even on-location trainings in other parts of the globe so we can actually have this dissemination of information faster and more frequently. And I also wanted to acknowledge some of the members of the Register, our stakeholder group, in working with us to provide this training. James Bledel and Jeff Eckhaus are actually going with us to China. They're providing additional material, additional training for the Chinese Register, as well as in Los Angeles and hopefully in other places where we will be doing the outreach. Thank you.
Thank you. Cyrus, let me ask a follow-up question. The crux of the question from Michele is, do the registrars understand what the important differences are in the new RAA? Do you have any feedback on, I guess, two related aspects? One is whether there's any resistance from registrars in engaging with us. And two is, what level of resistance is there to the terms, or lack of understanding perhaps is even another alternative, but not equivalent version of the same question. To what extent are they not aware even after they engage?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. This is Cyrus Namazi. I'm not aware of any particular resistance from any particular segment of the registrar community. To date, in fact, we've had quite a bit of enthusiasm, at least based on my information, the feedback I've received for registrars to move forward and signing on to it. In terms of issues that have been highlighted, I think it's actually on the agenda as the second issue, being able to essentially comply with local laws and providing the exemptions that are needed, for which we're actually working with the registrars to come up with that process and provide the exemption to whatever privacy-related laws they need to be exempted from so that they are not in breach of the RAA or in violation of their local laws.
Thank you.
James?
Thanks. James Bledel speaking, and I'm sorry, I'm having a very difficult time up here hearing the other speakers, so we're trying to keep up with the transcript. But I think that there's actually a secondary issue there, Steve, which is not so much that registrars are or aware of the obligations, or there's any resistance. But it's more a question of, can we count on ICANN to make this outreach effort and this education effort a priority? Because it's the registrars that don't participate in the stakeholder group or at ICANN meetings that their issues were the ones that drove the reform of the RAA in the first place. And that if they are left out of the process and don't meet their obligations for the new RAA, then that will be probably used to indict the whole GTLD and RAA process as a whole. And so I think we're asking to invest now in the education and the outreach to make sure that we can head that off and it doesn't become a crisis.
I would say the point is made quite strongly and clearly. So thank you. Does anybody else from the board or anybody else from the ICANN staff want to jump in further? Good. Thank you very much, Cyrus. And James, of course, too.
Okay, thanks, Steve. I think moving on to the next one, which Cyrus did touch on briefly, in relation to contracts and local law exemptions, now this doesn't refer solely to the RAA. It could also have impacts on the registry agreements as well. Is Volker in the room? Do you see him? Volker, I think you might want to have a couple of words on this.
Yes, thank you, Michele, for putting me on the spot here. Indeed, this is a problem, an issue that is of concern and has caused a lot of European registrars to be hesitant of signing the new RAA immediately, which is the problematic situation that some of the provisions in the data retention spec, even though there's an exemption process foreseen violate local law. While we have discussed with ICANN and agreed with ICANN that there should be an exemption process, that process has not yet been defined. And before we have that process in place, most European registrars feel very hesitant of accepting an agreement which would put them into conflict with local law by the 1st of January 2014 if the process is not in place or detailed. Furthermore, we have been a bit worried that movements that have been made by the European data protection officials have been, I would say, rebuked by ICANN, claiming that they were not proper legal authorities. And that was particularly worrisome because, for example, the Article 29 Working Party is a collection instituted by the European Union as an advisory committee made up of the local data protection commissioners. So while they have no legislative power on the European basis, each and every one of them is the person that we are looking to tell us what we have to do on a national level. So when the Article 29 Working Party gives us a statement that says that we have a problem with a certain practice or a certain contractual obligation, then we have to take that seriously because that's a warning shot in our direction, and we would appreciate it if ICANN would see the seriousness of such comments.
Is there anybody on the ICANN staff that wants to respond? Cyrus, please, thank you.
Yes, this is Cyrus Namazi. Thank you, Volker. I think I've been discussing this with Volker and Michele and other members of the leadership of the stakeholder group that we're very much sensitive to and in tune with requirements that might be imposed by European Commission and in particular the Article 29 Working Group. And I wanted to preface this by saying that we have absolutely no intention of jeopardizing the compliance of our contracting parties with local laws. In response to your comment about the process for being granted an exemption to some of the privacy-related issues in the contract, we are working on that. I hope to actually have the first draft of it for you to review. I'm thinking probably by Monday, Tuesday of next week, very shortly. Having said that, not having signed the RAA should not preclude anyone who is interested in signing it to start actually working on what systems and procedures.
Continue.
Thank you. I'm actually done.
Perfect.
Elliot?
I'd really like, Cyrus, I'd like to, well, and all, Elliot Noss, two cows, I'd really like to put a placeholder here and remind.
There's a bit of a lag. Oh.
Remind everybody, board, staff working on this issue, that this is not uniquely a European issue, that there are registrars all over the world who have privacy regimes that are what I would call user-friendly that could very well run in conflict with the RAA. So whatever solution you look to effect around both the type, both the form and the substance of exemptions, you really need make that generalized, not specific to this one instance. Thanks.
And just adding to what Elliot is saying, I mean the implications are not just on European registrars, it's on registrars with European clients in the case of the Article 29 letter. And there are, as Elliot's pointed out, I mean, I know Canada has rules. I was speaking to some people from other parts of the globe over the last couple of days, and some have things. Others are in the process of drafting them at the moment. It's not a uniquely European thing, but myself and Volker are European, so, you know, we would obviously think of ourselves to a certain degree first. James, go ahead.
Yes, we are also Europeans for the point of perspectives. We're Canadians as well because we serve customers in all those jurisdictions, so we're affected by them. But wanted to just add that this is another case, I think, or an example where we have two sides of government interests, the privacy side and the law enforcement side, that are pulling on the same blanket here, and we don't want this industry to kind of get caught up into that. So we need to Elliot's point, make sure that exemption process is useful and generic for those types of situations wherever we encounter them, because what we don't want to see is a bifurcated internal policy where we have to treat all of our customers on a jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis. We'd like to have sort of a flat privacy policy.
Noted.
Thanks. And the next item we had was digital divide issues. Who'd like to take the lead on that? James, I'm going to pick on you.
Sure, I'll tee that one up, but I'm hoping someone comes in and grabs that one. But essentially, where this topic originated, I believe it was born in the discussions of the verification of who is contact data and address data, which is a new requirement under the RAA, in which registrars are working very closely with ICANN staff to try and come up with a globally implementable system that works in all cases. And what we're running up against is that we have really great systems and tools available, for example, for North America and Canada and Europe and parts of Asia, but it's the parts of the world that I think that this organization is targeted for outreach and development in Latin America and Africa that are also probably the least accessible in terms of tools and systems to implement address checks or some of the other new requirements for verifying registrant identity. Uneven market where certain areas are just going to become off limits to registrars to service customers, and will either fall to resellers in those areas or will just kind of go dark entirely. And so there's a concern that that some of these issues will translate into broader digital divide.
Thanks, James. I mean, just to kind of underline that, in simple terms, for James in the U.S., be able to validate an address in the U.S. might cost, let's say for argument's sake, a couple of cents. But if he has to validate an address in, I don't know, China, it might cost a lot more. So it's going to be less attractive for him to do so.
I understand the question. I'm not sure I know the state of play in terms of the implementation and development, all that. Cyrus?
Sure. Cyrus Namazi with ICANN. I think that just for the benefit of everyone in the room who may not be in tune with, you know, the everyday discussions that are going on, there is actually an active working group on the register, our stakeholder group side, that is in contact with, in communication and in discussions with my team in terms of coming up with a feasible solution that actually provides that service, which we've asked for and is included in the RAA. And to clarify, on what James was saying, the commercial feasibility of it is obviously a critical component of whatever we jointly decide to implement and adopt as a tool for this. So we understand that we don't want it to be a huge financial burden, obviously, on the part of the operators. And we also understand that, you know, from region to region, the availability of tools may be different to a point that in some regions it may not even be feasible. So that's totally noted. Thank you.
Jeff?
Thanks. And it's Jeff Eckhouse here. And I think I just want to sort of raise it up a level just on just an overall piece. I think this is not a question for the board, but just maybe it is a question for the board. We'll see how it comes out. But that when things that come to you for approval, like the new RAA, the new registry agreement, other things that come through, that as we all know, you know, the sort of concept of it is we're raising the bar, making people more accountable, you know, trying to a better system, but really trying to make sure that we have better information. When we're doing that, are we taking into account that we're raising the bar, we're making it harder for new entrants from other nations or, you know, just other areas to enter into this ecosystem? Because we've made it, some of the pieces in the RAA, and I've seen, you know, in the registry agreement, and for example, I'm sure you've heard enough, but some of the pieces from the GAC advice that's come in, you know, asking registries which to do certain items, which of course will flow through the registrar, so the registrars will end up doing it because they're the point of contact with the registrant. So just to have that in mind to say, and maybe I'm bleeding into the next issue of the overload, but you know, that these are, as we're putting all these requirements on registrars and raising the bar, are we raising it so high that we're shutting a lot of people out and we're getting into a smaller ecosystem of, you know, a few registrars and that certain countries are being shut out in certain areas? And it's just something I'm hoping that you take into advisement and think about when all these regulations, all either agreements or other things come through for you to review. Because it's something that's concerning for us, because, and I think for everyone in general, if we start getting into a smaller ecosystem of people able to enter it. So I guess it's not a question, but more of just your thoughts on that.
My own thought is I understand the general framework that you're, you know, putting forth. Anytime you raise requirements in general for any reason whatsoever, you may have some people who no longer qualify or people who are potentially qualified who stop, who can't enter. I think there's both principle and pragmatism involved. On the pragmatism side, there's a question of how strong that effect is, and perhaps there's something that can be done to measure. However, on the principle of the matter, the direction that's being set, is one of improving the security, and it's indirect reaction to the current state of affairs. So I don't think there's any, it would take quite a lot of evidence about how it's an absolutely unworkable system, or it freezes out everybody except three big players or something like that. It's not exactly a direct trade-off between how many registrars we might lose or not gain versus trying to make a substantial change in the who is environment, for example.
Sorry to interrupt you, Steve. I'm a Filipino, and I do not know of any Philippine registrar. But if you were to ask me, if I had to choose between a high bar of performance on the internet, which is integral to the future of the Philippines, I would go for the high bar rather than a low bar of players. I hope this helps, Jeff. Thank you.
So just one quick comment on that. Hopefully I don't want to give the sort of thinking that, hey, let's trade off security for access, because that's not where I was heading to. It's more along the lines of, are these thoughts of what is required and how that works in other parts of the world come into consideration when looking at what's moving forward for ICANN and for what's required. That's more where I'm getting at. I completely agree with you. I don't think there's worth a trade-off of saying, let's lower the bar for security, let bad guys in so that it can go into other parts of the world. Don't want that at all, because it's sort of like a power grid. It's, you know, it's all integral, and if one part fails, it would all fail. So that is not what I'm saying, and I just want to be clear, that make sure that message gets across.
Thank you.
Yoav, then Mike, and Arno, and we also have somebody on remote participation, and we also have Elliot. I think just for the sake of participation, if we could go to the remote participation first.
Her answer is already answered in the jabber.
Okay, perfect. In that case, I'll go to Yoav.
Yes, hi, Yoav Keren, Genso Counselor for the Registrars. I want to talk again about the practical implementation of this validation of addresses. I think there, and I've said that before, unfortunately, this was not taken into consideration until now, that there are significant issues with non-Latin-speaking countries. There are no databases of addresses in Latin letters in Israel, not in any Arab countries. We write from right to left. Who is collected in English, practically? People transliterate their addresses in as many ways as you can think of. There's no option to really validate the address automatically. So good luck with that. And I think that maybe this will, you can understand that this is not going to be simple to solve this. Now, my question to Cyrus, actually, maybe to the board, if you're working on a solution or a provider that will give us registrars a database to validate through, does it mean that ICANN is going to fund that, just like you fund the escrow services for the registrars? Can we? So that if you said that you want to make sure that there's no commercial burden, so that would be a way to make sure that there's no commercial burden.
Thank you. This is Cyrus. In response to the first part of your question, I think I mentioned this earlier, that obviously, there, at least none that I'm aware of, there doesn't exist one global solution that fits all. So we understand that, and even the RAA stipulates to the fact that, you know, where it's commercially and technically feasible to provide that service. The answer to your second question, the commercial or financial burden, I guess it should be prefaced by undue commercial and financial burden. We've had loose discussions about who's going to pay for the service, and I think that remains to be a question on the table, and we probably should address it when we come up with a solution that both sides actually find feasible, and then see what kind of an arrangement we can come up with that satisfies both sides. But no, I can't tell you with 100% certainty that we will pay for it today. Thank you.
You have quickly, please.
Yeah, just quickly. So I would, if this is the case, so I would call on the board. If we want to make sure that there's no additional burdens on registrants at the end, and no, we are talking about digital divide here, so the ICANN should support that and should be the funding the solution.
Mike.
Thank you. Interesting adoption of the term digital divide, which generally is used in a totally different context and with a totally different meaning. But then again, as one of my colleagues has pointed out, there's an interesting digital divide in terms of ages, not just geographies. I think it's an interesting question. And personally, I'm hearing some very positive responses coming out of this. It would appear that the day of the global registry, is over, that entities who want to be transnational are going to need to get local partners, are going to need to get resellers in country, because they're not going to be able to do everything everywhere in the world. And to me, that's very positive. I actually think that it's going to have the contrary effect that you're talking about. I think that it's going to have the effect of people actually encouraging the development of local registrars or resellers who will be able to attend to verification in the local country. We will see more registrars in more countries rather than the current trend of consolidation into a couple of big transnational registrars, and to me that's really encouraging. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. I'm very encouraged, and I think it's a very positive development.
Elliot, and then Tom, and then we can close this one out.
Yeah, so two comments. First, you know, I want to poke a little bit at what Judith said, but especially what Steve said around presumption. So, yes, we all want secure domain name transactions. I think we've heard repeatedly over the last 2 or 3 years that the validation and verification we're putting in is unlikely to deter bad actors, that this is a very simple level of validation and verification that will do a much greater job of helping PRISM and the NSA than it will of deterring any bad actors who will easily get around throwaway email addresses and throwaway cell phones. So to describe it as, well, we all want security, and then we need a whole wall of evidence to see that this is having a negative impact on the industry, implies the presumption that what we've done now is really affecting some security. And I think we've heard repeatedly in the dialogue here that it's not. So I don't like that assumption or that implication. I want to push back on it. And second, Mike, I hate to rain on your parade here, but when you look at this digital divide issue in conjunction with the new reseller provisions, you know my business quite well. You know I have partners all over the world. We have more partners in Africa than anybody does. We're going to be forced under the new RAA to pull back control from those resellers, to disempower them, and to centralize the responsibilities. So we would love it to be a regime that was what you sounded like you were hoping for, where we could have local partners that we could empower more and that we could, you know, create a chain of trust with. But what the new RAA does, because law enforcement felt that they couldn't get at resellers, which I question nobody has ever presented any evidence of, and despite the fact that I've asked for it for years, time and time again, please give us situations, what we're now forced to do is to centralize. These new rules will have us pull power away from the local partners that we put our wholesale system in place in the first place to empower and to distribute. So, you know, we have the same intent. I think we've looked at the outcomes of this new document, and we think it works exactly reverse. Thanks.
Thank you, Elliot. I'm very empathetic to the to an aspect of what you're raising. Let me just sort of paint a brief history here. We've had the law enforcement community pressing us hard over a period of time, long period of time. In Dakar, a year and a half ago now, the GAC took us to task publicly and vigorously for not having paid attention. And I was affected by that because I, besides being the first time that I had chaired the board, and I've been tracking that issue for a good long time, we put a lot of emphasis on internally on the staff, saying, we've got to attend to this, got to make something happen. It's been going on too long. It's a breach of our processes, basically, that we don't have a way of reaching closure on it. And in general, I've been, again, just speaking personally, empathetic with the law enforcement issues. That said, it also occurred to me very pointedly at that point and continuously that we don't have any feedback on the effectiveness of these measures. We don't have a measure of how much it's going to help. A simple analogy is if you're sitting on a city council in some town and the chief of police comes and says, we need more cops on the beat because we want to, it'll make life safer, and makes an impassioned plea and the city council authorizes the additional expenditure. It's obligatory if the police chief actually wants to maintain his credibility or even his job, that in some period of time, 6 months or a year, he comes back and says, and thank you very much, and here's what has happened. We've reduced street crime by such and such, and we've reduced petty theft by such and such. And if he can't do that, either he's got an overly tolerant city council, which is typically not quite the case, or people just don't know what they're doing. In that spirit, I certainly have begun to ask law enforcement side, what are your metrics? Do we have any data for this? And I think it's important that we tee that up. I don't think that we just do it by going to the same law enforcement people that are pressing us for these things. I think we have to expand that into higher reaches within law enforcement and probably other segments of society to help build that. I know you well enough to know that you're a very knowledgeable and thoughtful person, and I think it would be helpful to take this beyond this level of discussion and try to frame how would one go about getting that information? What information is necessary? How would one go about it? How do you make any relationship? We have no data, so we have no correlation, and even if we had correlation, we wouldn't know whether it was causal. And so there's a trio just right there of important questions about how to proceed. So we have many, many initiatives underway. We're spending money and energy in a lot of different areas. But this, it seems to me, is an important thing that we should do. And I'm, again, re-energized to put that in motion somehow. I don't know how. But ideas are welcome.
You know, Steve, I'm thrilled to hear you're asking them for metrics. And if it's helpful to you, you know, I think you have the ability to say, hey, I gave you now, or we've given you now, what you asked for without you providing metrics. So, boy, is it incumbent on you now to start tracking these issues or to start demonstrating what they are. I mean, again, my great frustration is I've said so many times to law enforcement, privately, publicly, public forum, you know, working groups at various meetings, you know, or just breakout sessions, you know, hey, what's your evidence? What's the data? And, what are specific examples? Where do you have a problem?
Yeah. Now, it is not just law enforcement in the specific and narrow sense. Intellectual property community and others all have strong voices and strong stake in all of this. And the privacy community has a very strong stake in unintended or negative consequences. So I don't know the best way to proceed. My thinking is that embedding it back into the same part of the law enforcement community that we're dealing with probably isn't quite broad enough or deep enough in terms of the questions we're asking, and we may have to find some other way to get a broad picture. I don't mean a vague picture. I just mean one that takes into account all the different forces. So having said that, I look forward to some further discussions. We should move on to some other topic. Erica, are you?
I mean, it's a bit hard, this discussion, because we already so far in the process to... So I have great sympathy with the concerns you raised, and I'm pretty sure I said this before. It's a critical balance one has to strive between establishing a system which works for all, you know, across the globe, for all of you, and the requirement, certain... law enforcement and governments, you know, opposing on this environment because of concerns which come in reality in many cases from, you know, from different backgrounds. But nonetheless, it's a reality, and I think we are already very far in the process. So what I was wondering, because, I mean, hearing your concerns and many very legitimate points you raise, what one does usually, I mean, I don't want to intervene in any contract negotiations, but, you know, there's always a time in all kind of contracts or, you know, in negotiating processes for a review. So maybe we should take all the points in consideration, should work how, observe carefully how it works and how it works on the market. And if all these concerns which we see in the moment are legitimate, sometimes they fade away and reality is much more pragmatic than it looks in the very beginning. I've seen this quite often in international negotiating. So maybe we should be a little bit patient, observe it very carefully, track all negative developments, and pull the plug if something goes really completely wrong. And I would be surprised if there's not great willingness then to do so. I'm a veteran. I mean, make your own point. I mean, this would be my recommendation.
Thank you.
The only point I was making a shake is that this is the kind of thing that is unlikely to be rolled back anyway, whatever the data that comes after the works.
Okay, I have Arno and then Tom. And I think we need to wrap this topic up.
Yeah, quick comment. My name is Arno Viss. I'm a new ICANN accredited registrar. And the example that Steve Crocker just made is exactly my problem with the whole situation here. Is if a government wants to create a safe area somewhere, they put more police on the street. They don't ask the shop owners to patrol the streets. And that is exactly what's happening here. Me, as a small business owner, we are forced to have better data than the government has at some point. I'm not against validating data. I don't need statistics to prove it, to be honest. It's a fact of life that we have to. But given the fact that the government has the Chamber of Commerce data, it has IRS data, it has all the data we need to validate against, which is something we can do perfectly well with APIs, I would say if the government wants this, we should validate against government data, and I think a lot of the problems would go away. And if the government doesn't have that data yet, well, we cannot validate it, but they cannot demand it from us yet. And that would be my way of approaching this situation. And especially as a small business, it's the only way to do it right. You cannot hold me responsible for data that the government should have in a much better format and more accurate than I could ever have by investigating as a 20-people company. It's a ridiculous situation for me. So, but I'm new, so maybe I don't understand how this works yet, but that's my observation.
Thanks, Arno. Tom?
So my question is one of implementation, and I'm wondering if ICANN could clarify whether or not they're thinking of a one-size-fits-all solution, or if they are thinking that perhaps they would start with certain territories where it's easier to do this and roll it out geographically, or if they would have different standards based on the availability of data.
Yes, Cyrus Namazi with ICANN. Thank you for that question. I mean, those questions we actually don't have the answers to today. There is working parties on both sides that are trying to get to the bottom of what's available and what is the right approach to come up with the right solution. So your questions are actually a good subset of what are some of the questions that we're trying to get answers to. So I invite you actually to come participate in the working group that is looking at these issues and to determine what the right approach is. Thank you.
Okay, so Jeff, I'm going to give you the final word on this. No, you're gone? Okay. All right, the next topic we wanted to bring up was respect to both community and industry overload. Somebody want to read that one? James, go for it.
Sure. So it's something I've been harping on all week. I might as well tee this up for this conversation. It's always been kind of presumed that ICANN moved very, very slowly. I make a lot of analogies towards pushing a glacier uphill. But all kidding aside, that statement implies a degree of stability in our industry. Right now, and in the last few months, perhaps the last year and a half, we've turned a corner and we're now able to create change in our industry faster than the industry service providers can implement the changes. And so as a result, we have a backlog of changes that are coming through the pipeline. And I'll just give you a very quick example. We have a holdover item from a transfer policy. We have the new RAA. We have the new GTLDs. And we have a new transfer policy and a new expired names policy, all of these things coming in the next 6 months. And I think the result is a potential for a high level of confusion in the marketplace. We're right on that edge between being dynamic and being chaotic. And so one of a specific request that we have to staff and to the board is, is now the time that ICANN could adopt a more mature philosophy towards change management so that it has a predictable and repeatable cycle of releases of anything that would impact a registrant, so that we know that, for example, in February and August are the months where we will implement new policies, and that anything that's developed, released, or approved in the interim will have to wait for the next release cycle. And I think that if we start looking at this more programmatically and less of let's get this all done and get it on the pipeline as quickly as possible, I think we can prevent this industry from devolving into just a state of constant change, which I think everyone would agree is best described as chaos.
Thanks, James. Steve.
I'm in a state of no change at all.
Can I just, right, because I see Fadi's in the room. We need a base camp in industry, to borrow from your opening remarks. We need a chance to catch our breath and implement all of the things that are on our plate.
It's Chris. Look, I think that's actually a really excellent idea, and it brings up an interesting follow-on point, which is, okay, so that's a really excellent idea, and let's assume that other people think it's a really excellent idea, so now what? So I'm not sure that I'm clear what now what is, but I think that's something that we should look into, and it's not a board issue, it's a staff issue, but yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Maybe Cyrus or Fadi would want to speak to that? Since you're both here.
This is Cyrus. I can also echo what Chris was saying. In fact, James and I briefly talked about this morning. I think it's a great idea. So I've taken it as a to-do item for me to go back and perhaps even have more discussions with James and others who might have some input into coming up with something like that, because I totally sympathize with what James was saying, that the level of change and the magnitude and the pace of it is really, I think, orders of magnitude higher than what it used to be. And if we're not careful enough, I think you put it very well, James, we're going to go from dynamic to chaos very quickly. So this will serve as a dashboard for us to be able to throttle to this, you know, the right level of efficiency and peak performance, so to speak, that we want to get to. So I'll sign up to follow up for that. On that, thank you.
Volker?
That is very positive to hear. I just would like to just add one more point to what has already been said, which is that when ICANN presents timelines to registrars, when creating those timelines,
it would be helpful to look at what registrars have already have to implement and not just look at the top 10 registrars which have endless amounts of developer staff that can implement everything, but also look at the small registrars which are sometimes one man, five man, 10 man operations, and when they have to implement the entirety of the 2013 RAA obligations, plus the new GTLDs, plus the TMCH, plus the ERRP, plus whatever else comes onto the plate, that's bordering on the impossible. And if ICANN does not want to de-accredit all the registrars that are small, these timelines need to be looked at in the future. Now, we have these timelines for the projects that we have on our plate right now, and there's nothing to be done about that. But for the future, when creating such timelines, ICANN should look at what already is there, how much work this actually is for most registrars, and when creating those timelines and proposing those timelines, take that into account.
Thanks, Volker. I think we can close up on this particular topic, move on to the last one. Unfortunately, there's a typo there. We didn't want to talk about the RAA because we've already spoken about the RAA. We actually wanted to talk about the RRA, and I can see Rob Hall sitting there, and I think this was your topic.
It was, thank you. As McKelly mentioned, this is about the registry registrar agreements that we're starting to see. So we spent a lot of time as a community over the last 2 years working out the RAA and even the registry agreements, which are now locked in place. And as you can imagine, as registrars, we're now starting to talk to these new registries, and we're seeing agreements from them, draft agreements, I'll say, that I believe have some problems in them that undo a lot of what was intended in the RAs and the RAAs. So, you know, ICANN has set up this competitive level of registrars. You've got accreditation processes, and all of a sudden, there's no oversight whatsoever of the RRAs by ICANN until they want to make a change to it, which seems odd to me. So the process has been in the past and continues to be that an initial registry agreement, they can put whatever they want in it pretty well. If they want to change it down the road, it's got to come back through a public process at ICANN where it's posted and there's comments and ICANN approves the change. But there's no approval by ICANN or even visibility of ICANN into the original agreement they're asking us to sign. And to give you an idea of some of the things we're being asked to sign, they're actually asking us to sign agreements with third parties not covered under the ICANN umbrella at all, with no oversight of those contracts. We're seeing things such as, I only want to deal with registrars in my country. If you're not incorporated in my country, I'm not going to deal with you. I don't care if you're accredited by ICANN or not. So it's concerns like this that we're seeing that I believe change the dynamic of what ICANN intended. And I'm, you know, we asked at the contracting session yesterday of ICANN staff, and they said, well, the way it's always been done is if there's any change required, they have to come back to us, but the initial one's on them. That's all great in a world where most of them have existed for years and everything's a change, such as COM and NET and org. But now we've got hundreds of new ones coming at us, each with their own idea of what's right or wrong and what's allowed in these or not, and there's no ICANN visibility or oversight. I don't know how to change this other than to ask the board to say, look, the status quo we don't think is okay. You may need to get involved with staff to say, you might want to look at this, or you might want to have some insight or even get a copy of the things, because technically you don't even have a draft of them before they're asking us to sign them, and as you can imagine, they're coming at us fast and furious. So I think perhaps the board should be aware of this, and I think our, well, certainly my request, and we've had discussions within our constituency on it, is could you please get involved in this, because we think it's a problem that's occurring, and it's going to occur very rapidly now, and certainly I think you need to be aware of it and should be exercising some oversight over it.
Thanks, Rob.
Oh, I think this pushes on basically the same broad point that we need feedback, we need an understanding of the coupling between the decisions and actions that we take and what the real impact is in the community.
Okay. Anything else on this topic? So, Steve, did you have any issues you wanted to discuss with us? Oh, Elliot, go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to be clear, we're on the last one now. Oh, this, but, you know, can I, if it's a new issue, I want to bring up something on RAA process and oversight, if I could, Michele. So I want to do something in the, in, you know, the way it's spelled up there. This is just something that came out of our meeting very briefly, that came out of our meeting with compliance today. Thank you. We were made to understand in our meeting with compliance today that the role of compliance, which we're okay with as long as we know what rules we're playing by, is to affect contract enforcement, but that they're not responsible at a policy or a strategic level for what stopping bad actions in the DNS. And so when we as registrars have to work with compliance to help them with, at a policy level, what things they're being required to enforce, and in this case, this came out of the bulk who is discussion, they threw up their hands, and that's fair of them to say, hey, we're just the ones who are, enforcing the rules that are handed to us. But at a policy level, we're not the ones who make those rules. And, it was also unclear from subsequent discussion who inside of ICANN staff, what branch of ICANN staff is responsible for strategically, who is responsible for bad actions in the DNS. And so, we'd look for some guidance from staff. This could be Fadi. This could be Cyrus. As to when we need to deal with these issues around what the rules are strategically, not at an implementation or tactical level, who is it that we speak with?
Fadi, can I ask you to step into this and speak about where in the staff or in organizational terms you have in mind for the overall perspective of bad actions in DNS versus the kind of specifics we're now putting into the RAA, the RRA, and the RA.
Is this an organizational question in the sense of who on the team is now going to handle these? Well, we have a new division run by a new president. He has a staff that includes relationship staff, Cyrus, and they will coordinate with you and manage issues with compliance with the agreements. If these issues are raised by finance or other parts of ICANN or the community that require compliance to get involved, compliance will get involved. Compliance continues to report to me.
That isn't helpful. I'll try to re-ask the question. What the contracts are about and compliance is about on many levels is bad acts in the DNS, and these contracts are intended to best manage and stop bad acts in the DNS. Compliance has said, fairly, in my view, hey, we're the cops. We're enforcing these rules. It's, yes, compliance reports to you, and, there's Akram in a new role, and there's Cyrus in a new role. Who is responsible inside of staff for that specific area of policy, for that specific area of strategy, let me call it, because I think that's more appropriate in the organization. Who is strategically responsible from your perspective for setting the agenda and the rules for bad acts inside the DNS?
The vice president, the executive, who's responsible for that area.
Which is?
Maggie Sarad.
Maggie has said in our meeting, and I thought it was fair, I'm enforcing these rules. I'm not setting them.
Yeah, but the rules, the management of a contract is standard work. Compliance work has a science. There is people who know how to do compliance for the last 100 years.
There's a disconnect between what you just said and what we talked about in our meeting. I think what I'd ask to
let's
do is
take, it,
take
outside.
It outside the room. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Are the two of you going outside to battle it out, hand to hand?
I was hoping to start with a hug, but I don't know.
Okay. I was going to ask, who are your seconds? Anyway, speaking again quite personally, Elliot, that your question, as it has, resonates with me, and I'll pursue that. Well, I think we've made it through the agenda, and we certainly have made it through the time. So thank you all. This is I think we touched on very key points that I know have been on your mind and seem very appropriate from where we're sitting. So thank you, and we'll proceed, and we have a couple of action items that we've taken away from this.
No, thank you, Steve, and thank you to the members of the board for taking this time with us. Speak to you again in the future.